I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories in the outdoors. On this episode, we have a story about a cyclist who won't shut up. His name is Noam Osband, and he lives in New York City, which has not traditionally been a bike-friendly place. Bikes are slowly becoming more commonplace there, but animosity towards cyclists still runs deep. The streets are full of pedestrians, tourists, food carts, buses, cars, so it's hard to be heard and easy for frustration to boil over. Sometimes you feel you have to raise your voice and shout at people just to get anywhere on a bike. But earlier this year, something happened on the Brooklyn Bridge that changed the way Noam thinks about things. On today's episode, he shares his story. It's a story about communication and about how to get what we want. I'll let Noam take it from here.
I've always been a chatterbox. I just like people. When I wait in line at a supermarket or a pharmacy, I always start a conversation with the person next to me. Typically, I ask people questions about themselves. Nothing too personal, nothing too direct, and most folks really just open up, as if they've been waiting for someone to puncture that invisible bubble of propriety that separates us from each other. Part of the pleasure of these conversations is just the randomness. I'm with complete strangers, but for a brief moment, the parallel lines of our lives intersect. I find that really special. It's just always been in my nature to engage with people like this. But what I didn't realize until recently was that this tendency might be more than just a goofy character trait. It might be the key to happily cycling in New York. One of my favorite places to interact with strangers is on my bike. Since I'm only crossing paths with somebody for a second or two, I don't feel inhibited or self-conscious. Instead, I'm free to be myself. And so I do things one doesn't normally do in public.
So I throw my hands up, play my song, butterflies fly away, not in my head like, yeah.
Singing on my bike feels like the privacy of my bathroom mixed with the euphoria of a nice ride.
I know it'll be okay, yeah, yeah, party in the USA. Party in the USA, so I throw my hands up.
Other times when I'm biking fast and feeling energized, I just kind of howl like a wolf.
Ow! Ow!
Fuck yeah. It's New York. You can do whatever you want in public. So when I'm feeling happy and extroverted, like really happy and extroverted, I just straight up talk to folks for my bike. At red lights, I'll compliment cyclists on their clothes. Other times, I'll make eye contact, pump my fist, and yell, "Yes!" A simple, positive message to cyclists and pedestrians. A Joycean affirmation. It's not a dialogue. I'm just shouting out before fading into the distance. They don't have time to even say anything back. But for me, there's that moment of connection, a connection I seem to crave. Most people smile back. And then there are my more mischievous antics, like this one.
Jesus loves you.
Jesus loves you. I used to say this to people on my bike for years. I'm not entirely sure what compelled me to belt out Jesus loves you in an unidentifiable, yet clearly foreign accent. I just thought it was really funny, partly because I'm a Jewish atheist, and partly because of the blank stares I'd get in return. Occasionally, I do go negative, but it's for a good reason. Or so I tell myself when I give the finger to New York City tour buses. I don't shout or scream curse words. You don't hear me scream, fuck you. Instead, I just make sure there are no children. And then I make eye contact with the people on the top of a double-decker bus while silently and stridently raising my middle finger. In my mind, this is actually an act of kindness. The most common reaction is laughter, and now the chuckling tourists can return home with a story about that cliche New York attitude. I laugh because I know how artificial the interaction is. I'm not actually angry, I'm just hopelessly extroverted. But as much as I love these interactions, the harsh reality of biking in a city often smothers the goodwill. Sometimes kindness doesn't seem like an option, even for a happy-go-lucky guy like me. I first rode a bike in a city at age 25. I was living in Boston, and I'd stare, astonished at the bravery of people cycling down Massachusetts Ave, one of the city's busiest streets. I was envious, too, because Mass Ave terrified me. The street had no bike lanes at that time, and because it's wider than most of Boston's notoriously narrow streets, the cars go fast. It's not the best street for cycling, but the street went straight to the prison where I was working as a teacher at the time. I vowed to bike to work, and within a few months I did. I slowly acclimated to drivers honking from behind me and screaming when they passed me. I'd get deadly stares and angry shouts from so many people, even from coworkers. One afternoon, a van of corrections officers jeered me as they passed my bike. "Go back to California, you hippie!" screamed one especially angry man. I now live in New York City, and the situation isn't any better. If you ride in a city, you learn to accept the fact some people will always be schmucks, offering an unwanted 2 cents at unexpected moments. You learn that some people just don't think you have a right to be on the road, and they'll tell you that in no uncertain terms, even if you're obeying the law and minding your own business. I've resigned myself to that part of cycling. Hell, I've even accepted the fact that a certain level of sexual harassment is now par for the course. You see, I often ride topless on my bike. I do it for pragmatic reasons. I just don't want to dampen my shirt with sweat. And it also feels great to let the breeze rub across my bare chest. However, it's also opened me up for the first time in my white male privileged life to consistent sexual harassment. It's amazing how many dudes think, because you don't have a shirt on, they've got a right to comment on your body. "Put a shirt on, fag," they'll say. "Wear your clothes," they bark. They'll yell at me about my breasts and my stocky build, what we refer to in my family as the Goldberg jeans. I'm pretty sure when men scream at me, "Nice tits," they're being sarcastic. I'll always remember one unseasonably warm spring evening when I biked to Times Square topless around 1 a.m. A garbage man stood in the bike lane picking up trash, and as I passed him, he turned around, almost colliding into me. Angrily, he screamed, "What up, fat boy?" His words stung. They hurt. For a couple minutes, I felt like an insecure, chubby middle schooler all over again. Sometimes the harshest words aren't even yelled. The meanest comment I have ever received came from a well-coiffed woman in Midtown. As I waited at a red light, she was walking by. She stopped in front of me, looked me up and down, and with quiet fury said, "You disgust me." I'm no saint. Occasionally I respond to comments about my chest with a loud, "Fuck you!" And sometimes I even yell at pedestrians. There's no way around it if you bike in the Big Apple. Sure, there are designated bike lanes, but during rush hour, those bike lanes are crowded with people, cars, and food carts. Pedestrians wander about, totally oblivious to bike traffic. And because it's such a noisy city, those little bells on your handlebars don't get anyone's attention. So I often end up shouting, "Bike lane!" at the top of my lungs. I tell myself it's the safe thing to do. It's really the only way to get anywhere and not hit people, but I still feel like an asshole. Stuff like this gives cyclists a bad rap. more importantly, it doesn't work well. There's so much noise in New York that another loud voice amid the din doesn't really stick out. It's no wonder there's animosity between cyclists and the rest of New Yorkers. At times, the animosity seems fixed, unalterable. For a while, it seemed that the lion was more likely to lie with the lamb than the cyclist with the pedestrian. Until, that is, one day I cracked the code.
Hey, it's Willow again. We'll hear how Noam cracked the code in just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor. Support for Out There comes from Fjällräven, making the outdoors accessible for everyone. Fjällräven makes durable, environmentally friendly gear for outdoor enthusiasts. In case you were wondering, the name Fjällräven means Arctic fox in Swedish. I spoke with the company's North American CEO, Nathan Dopp, and he told me Fjällräven was started by a Swede who really liked Arctic foxes, so he named the company after them.
They're very elusive creatures, and there are not a lot of them left in Sweden, so not only do we name the brand after that, but we have a foundation and contribute money to the preservation of the fox. So that's our spirit creature.
Fjällräven's products range from clothing to backpacks to tents and sleeping bags. You might have seen their popular Kanken backpacks around. Anyway, all their gear is designed to let you enjoy nature without worrying about your equipment or about its impact on the environment. For more information, visit fjällräven.us, and if you're not entirely sure how to spell Fjällräven, just head over to our website, which is outtherepodcast.com. And now, back to the story.
January 1st, 2017 was a day full of joy. The night before, I'd seen Phish play a great concert at Madison Square Garden. I've seen the band over 30 times, but it was my first time catching the New Year's Eve show. Also helping the cause was the tab of acid I split with a friend at the concert. Enjoying my post-show glow, I walked home to my apartment in Brooklyn, a three-hour walk. I enjoyed the unseasonably warm air as I made my way down Manhattan and to the Brooklyn Bridge. The bridge was completely empty, save for the cops on patrol. It was so unusual to have it all to myself. Usually the Brooklyn Bridge is a complete tourist trap, clogged with hundreds of people meandering along in the bike lane and posing for photos. Every cyclist knows that you skip the Brooklyn Bridge if you can help it. Yeah, it has amazing views of the Statue of Liberty and the Manhattan skyline, but the throngs of people make it so hard to get through that I don't usually get to even savor the vista. But that night, walking into Brooklyn with the bridge empty, there was nobody around, so I turned around and actually walked backwards, savoring the view with each step. Lower Manhattan from a distance is really one of the prettiest things I know. I've always loved that view. It's huge, lit buildings, all that human striving and creation under an unending sky. And for once, I was actually able to enjoy it calmly and alone. Seeing what humankind has erected on that island, it makes me proud and happy to be a Homo sapien. The following day, January 1st, I was headed back into Manhattan, excited to record interviews on the street for my first paid podcasting freelance work. I packed my gear with gusto and I headed on bike into town. I got to the Brooklyn Bridge, and the combination of a holiday and balmy weather meant the bridge was more packed than usual. I mean, it was completely full of pedestrians in the bike lane. It was super annoying. But I didn't want to yell at people to get out of the way. Phish, New Year's, the view, this gig. It all conspired to make me unreasonably optimistic. And so instead of yelling, I tried something different. I began to sing. Not the Miley Cyrus type singing. Not singing just because I'm happy. This was purposeful singing. Singing to accomplish something.
In the bike lane. Can you please
happened next was amazing. Amazing in that I can't really believe this is happening so easily kind of way. People moved. They heard me and they stepped aside, letting me pass smoothly and easily. And not just that, they smiled. They laughed. They were doing what I wanted, what I needed, and they were happy about it. I hadn't planned out this new strategy, but it was working. It was working amazingly well. Working better than anything else I had tried before. Better than any bell or any yell. I was biking, singing, connecting with strangers, and making them happy. Basically, my own personal idea of heaven.
Bike lane, you're in the bike lane.
I sang my way across that bridge. It augured well for the new year. Almost 3 months later, I was by myself in Mexico for a film festival. The festival, in Puerto Vallarta, had put me up in an all-inclusive beachside hotel for 2 nights. I sat over dinner with a bottle of wine and a book entitled Marry Me, a John Updike novel about divorce. I finished most of the book and the whole bottle of wine, and before taking my happy buzz for a walk on the beach, I chose to waste a few minutes on the internet in my room. I went to the Reddit front page and saw a link entitled How to Clear Out the Bike Lane, and an image of a cyclist with a red bag that looked exactly like the bag I use. I clicked on the link, and sure enough, it was me, singing my way through the crowd on January 1st. The video was entitled Bike Lane Hero, New Year's Day. It's a weird feeling finding yourself on the front page of Reddit. I had no idea I had even been filmed, or that the film was now viral. In fact, it's now been watched over 1.4 million times. There's something so meaningful about the fact that the friendliest way to cross the bridge is also the most effective. It feels like some sort of biblical parable, a reward for kindness. New York was the home of baseball manager Leo DeRocher, who famously said, "Nice guys finish last." And when I read the news these days, I worry he might be right. But you know what gives me hope? The simple fact that singing and smiling across the bridge is the fastest way to get from Brooklyn to Manhattan. It took all those years of yelling from my bike to find that out. Maybe we live in a world where nice people can finish first. We just need to sing more to find that out.
Noam Osband. He's a producer and musician based in New York City, and you can find more of his work at noamosband.com. We've got a link to that on our website as well. A big thank you to Jillian Raley, Melanie Minos, Deb and Vince Garcia, and Ruth Tronick for their financial contributions to Out There. Ruth wrote me the sweetest note when she sent her donation. She said, and I'm quoting here, "Just wanted to say thanks for Out There. My running partner has been quite sick for over a month, and between that and life stress, I've been down. Listening is often the boost I need to get out the door alone to run and have a chance to connect with people." Thank you so much for the kind words, Ruth. I hope your running partner gets well soon. If Out There is making a difference in your day, I hope you'll consider making a donation of your own. The show exists for you and because of you, and support from listeners makes it possible to do what we do. Just head over to outtherepodcast.com and click support. Also, if you're not in a position to contribute financially, you can still help us out. We would love it if you would leave a review of the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as an added incentive, if you send us a screenshot of your review, we will enter you into a drawing for a beautiful Hydro Flask tumbler. Just email me at willow@outthereshow.com. If you've already left a review, thank you so much. And don't worry, there will be more giveaways that you can take part in down the road. That's it for this episode. Our theme music was written by Jared Arnold, and our marketing and business development director is Alex Egger-King. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.